Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading the Bar podcast. Parker McBride here. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Matt Wasko. How are you today, Matt?
I'm fantastic. People probably noticed we went a week without a show.
We did.
And one of the things that I did, we actually recorded the show I posted this last week and a week before that. So episode 27 that we recorded, I waited 1 week and released it the week of our meet. So, but anyway, so we were competing last week in my first powerlifting competition that you were coaching me on, and I'm very happy with the results.
Yeah, it went really well. So some of you that follow Matt on social medias know that he set a Kansas state record for his age and weight class.
And then, yeah, and the W, there's a lot of federations. So yeah. It's in the WRPF, which is a fairly new federation. The national record for the WRPF is for my age group and weight is pretty low. It's 308.6. And which, if you look at the top 100 bench presses in all federations for tested, my age group, which I won't mention, and my weight, the bottom of the top 100 in the United States is around 325. It's around there.
And you completed, what, like a 314.6?
314.6, right. And you had set the last one for a 336.4. I think that's right.
Yeah.
And my bar shifted on me. My elbow kind of went up, and I pulled it back down. But by that time, my bar dropped. Even though I got it up, didn't count. So, yeah. You know, it was an interesting competition because there was a lot of lifts, especially in deadlift. I was surprised how many deadlifts didn't count. I would think there would be more technical errors in the bench press or squat, but there was more deadlifts that didn't squat that went up than that were disqualified. And so that was something that I was wanting to do a little more research on to find what were people messing up that they weren't counting. So so that was fascinating. I was enjoying watching the deadlift just from that standpoint, trying to figure out why these were being disqualified.
Yeah, that's interesting. So any of you guys that don't know a powerlifting meet, basically you do three different lifts. You do a back squat, you do a bench press, and you do a deadlift. And you have three attempts at each lift. So three back squats, three bench presses, three deadlifts. Each attempt, you can pick the weight that you want to lift. And if your lift is successful and the form is good and all of the judges give you approval, then the lift counts.
Right.
And we were talking about the weights earlier, like 314.6, 336.4. These are all very arbitrary weights. The reason they sound arbitrary is because they're in pounds. But the way the meets work is they go off of kilograms.
Right.
So it was like 142.5 kilograms. But that translates roughly to 314.6 pounds,
right,
for the bench press.
And for, you know, just to do an observation, I checked all other federations for Kansas, and I think the only one I could find that there is no Kansas records in the top 100 national.
Mm. So, mostly from other states. So Kansas are weaklings,
yes,
right?
Yeah. So it was, I mean, that's the thing. It's if I was going to set a record anywhere, this would be where to set it.
You do live in Kansas, so I give you that.
Yeah.
It's not like you're traveling over there set the record.
Yeah, I'm traveling to another state to just because I know that record's low. And we both went in knowing that that would, you know, hitting three past three away was not going to be difficult. Hmm. You know, to actually now, like I said, if I would have hit the 330, it wouldn't have counted nationally because according to their rules, you have to be at a regional meet for it to count nationally. So whatever you do in these local tournaments won't be counted for a national
Yeah, lift. They only count for state.
Right. So, you know, top 100, I was going to say, I think 336 would have put me in the bottom half of the 100 if I would have cleanly got that up. And I think that's definitely, I mean, I did a 335 twice within like the last 4 weeks going into that. So,
well, and that's, you talk about that pretty nonchalantly, but it really is pretty incredible when you think about it. That suggests, now not everybody that's strong is a power lifter, but to still to be in the top 100 for the bench press for this lift nationally, mm-hmm. for your age and your weight,
yeah,
that's still an impressive feat.
Well, I guess, you know, you've lifted very heavy. You still can lift very heavy, and there's a lot of guys. By a lot of guys, I've known several people that can do 315, right? But they're all in their 20s and 30s.
Yeah, and you're a little north of
yeah,
that.
And I guess I never really think about that until I started looking at the, you know, the top lifts in the country. Now, at the very, very top, you know, the number one, I think, is like 468, which is, you know, and the other thing I found out is they definitely test all the top lifters in the three categories. And I found that out at the end of the tournament. So they're all definitely tested.
By test, you mean drug test?
Yes, drug tested. But to be drug tested in the bench 468, I think that person weighed just under 219, 218. That's a hell of a lot of weight. And so that's crazy. Some people are just kind of freaky like that. I'd love to see how long his arms are and stuff like that, just out of curiosity, if they're built like a fire plug or something. But after you get through after the first probably three or four in my division, then it starts coming down real quick. I mean, I think it's 468. I think it's a 468. And then after that, it's like 425. And then you're starting to drop below 400 quick. You know, and by the time you're down into the top 10, you're around 390, and then the top 25 has a bunch of 380s in it. So my goal in the next couple of years is to try to break into that top 50 in the States. And maybe if I get a 375, that'll be right around 25th in the country.
And how many – so the age group – you said you didn't want to say it, but – It's 55 through 59.
Right.
Right. So you have that 5-year period, and you have how much longer in that period till you?
I'll be 58 next January.
Okay. So you got a couple years. Yeah, year and a half or so. Yeah. Still in that age group to break that. Then you will move on to a different age group.
Yeah,
in theory, the record should be lower.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because once you get to this age, typically like north of 40, that's when you expect strength to begin to decrease.
Right.
And you're in kind of a unique situation where you're kind of still increasing. Mm-hmm. Because you're working on your form, you're adding muscle mass, you're able to still increase, you know, your diet, you're able to still increase your strength. But typically people are getting weaker by this age.
Yeah, and I think some of that is just years of not working out. I think age definitely plays into it, but you know, I think you can counteract age and stay youthful by, you know, working out, staying in the gym, you know, keeping that strong back and shoulders. And you know, I have for a 50 plus year old person, I still have, you know, arthritis a little bit in my knees and in my shoulder. I don't feel it, but when I had knee surgery a couple of years ago, they said there was some wear and tear in there and a little beginning of arthritis. So,
I mean, who doesn't at that age? I would assume most people do.
Yeah. So, but I'm not feeling it, you know. I mean, I've been working on my legs because I know that was the thing that was really nice is that my leg strength's increased, you know, nothing to write home about, but just because of my leg strength increasing, it was much easier to keep my butt down, you know, form was easier to hold. It wasn't a struggle like it's been in the past to keep that down. And that's something that it's such a key component, I think, for me to reach the heavier weights and to hold form, that I'll be hitting my legs probably twice a week. You know,
it's important. You know, you think about the bench press and you have to basically just lay down and push a bar up. You think, but you don't realize how things like the legs or your core strength or your back strength can play a huge factor.
Huge factor. So back will be twice a week for sure. That's made a big difference. You know, so that's going to be mostly for form. And then, like this week, I worked out twice this week, and that's the first time I've only worked out twice in a long time. But I was saying earlier, I just had to take a breath. You know, I've been on, you know, always thinking about everything I'm eating, everything I'm putting in my body, and then making sure I'm working out at least 4 to 5 times a week. You know, so this week I just took a deep breath, you know, and it's been kind of nice to just kind of, you know. And so, but next week I'm ready to go, you know, I'm ready to get back on it. But
well, I think that the main conclusion I draw, especially when I relate it to our listeners, the people listening, a lot of people that are listening are probably in that middle age or even older category. Some of our younger listeners, this is still a fantastic thing to listen to as well. And that is, you know, you come on here and you talk about the habits that you have, the mm-hmm. way that you eat, the way you work out, the way you take care of your body. And the results of that is a Kansas State record in the bench press at your age. Something that very, very, very few people your age can do.
Right.
And not only that, there are people your age that are already struggling with things like mobility and getting around, you know, in their late 50s.
Right.
Let alone you're over here benching over 300 pounds.
Right.
And so I think that's just proof in the pudding right there that, you know, listen to what this guy's saying. Listen to Matt. Matt knows what he's talking about, and he's done it into some years where he shouldn't be able to still do it. And that says something. If you're looking to stay healthy for the long term, you know, follow what he's saying.
Well, you know, we have a philosophy. It's one thing to listen to studies, and those are definitely need to be referenced. But, you know, we see what works in the gym. And you said that to me a long time ago, where there's, you know, when you have contradictions versus what people are saying or nuanced opinions are saying, there's that, a study, and then what you've actually seen work. The way I approach my bench, all of it has increased my bench. Like the way as we had discussed before, my workouts from head to bottom are all about just benching heavy. Okay. Now I am starting to do more deadlift and squat, trying to get my legs stronger, because I'd like to do all three. But I want to be competitive, and I'm a ways from that now. So, but that just happens to be that if you have strong legs and a strong back, you are going to bench heavier. And so, but every aspect of what I'm doing is all geared towards a heavy bench. My workouts are very boring. They're always the same. And I hit pretty much the same exercises week in and week out. So going forward, you know, after having, I had a blast at the meet. I mean, it was, after I got done, I said, that was fun. I will say, and Parker knows this, I was nervous, you know, and I don't know why I was, but I think it was just the unknown, like, I've never done this before, you know, and I don't, you know, and the other part is I haven't competed in anything since my 20s, like not like a competitive against, you know, where you're being measured. And the last time I did compete late in my early 30s, but by my early 30s, I was done competing. And so it's been 20 some years since I've actually been in a competition. So it was, you know, the night before, I was laying in bed thinking, start, press, rack, start, press, rack. I went to bed thinking those three words because of my, as we have talked about, when I bench, I don't hear, everything shuts off. I don't hear anything. So that was going to be, that was something I had to really work on.
Yeah. Well, it was successful.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way. I mean, it may not have been perfect, but for your first meet, I think you did fantastic.
No, I appreciate that.
I was kind of nervous for you too. You know, I wanted it to go well, and I think it worked really well. And now we have something to build off of moving forward.
And I will say this. I thought, I know why you made the decisions you did, and they were the right decisions. And because, you know, you could say, hey, I should have gone for the 336 on the second one, and maybe it would have gone up. But, you know, it's an odds game, right? Let's get the sure thing and then hit it. And we kind of talked about that. If everything's just, you know, I'm smoking, I'm not nervous, the first one goes great, I'm hitting all the commands. I mean, sometimes you can kind of feel things are really smooth, right? Mm-hmm. And being the first one, you know, it's like there was some apprehension. Am I going to hear these commands? Am I going to obey the commands? Because it's a different type of that's the thing I think people need to understand, is that bench press competition is very different than a touch and go.
Very different.
Very different. You know, to give you some perspective, you know, I've done a touch and go of 375. There's no way I could do a bench press competition of 375. Number one, I don't think I could pause it and get it off my chest. I'd have to have the reflex. And then butt would come way off the ground, so off the bench. So it's very, very different. And it's actually, I mean, but I, like I said, I got done. I said, oh, I'm ready to do that again. That was fun, you know. So, you know, that was something we need to, you know, determine is when we're going to do the next one. And you've even said you're considering doing it.
Well, I'd consider it. You know, back when I was powerlifting a little more seriously, I was significantly heavier, more muscular, right, and lifting heavier than I probably could now. But, you know, there's different weight classes, and I could compete at a lighter weight class than where I used to be. So that's something I've considered, because I don't desire to
put on the weight,
put the weight back on. Really, it's a lot of work. You found that out, right? You competed in the 220 class, and you weighed in at what, like 209?
Yeah, I think it was 209. Yeah.
So, you know, you still got 11 pounds of room to gain there, and there's like a 181 class, and that's probably about where I'd fall.
Yeah, and I think you would do fantastic, only because your bench to body weight ratio is fantastic, and you've already done 500 plus. You know, on the deadlift and squat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so if you did all three of those, I think you put up a tremendous, you know, total scores.
Well, I thought about it, you know, because I absolutely enjoyed coaching you.
Yeah, that was a blast.
I love doing that. But I thought to myself, if I'm going to be here, I might as well be lifting too, you know.
And that would be good. You know, hopefully you'd give me the honor to spot you, because.
Of course.
But I was thinking, when you told me the other day, it's like you were thinking about, well, I got to work on my spotting game, you know. Because I was like, man, every time you picked that up, it was like it floated in front of me. It was like the perfect spot. And I've had enough people spot me. There's a big difference, you know. I don't like someone who jars me when they remove the bar for me. So,
well, when you personal train for 4 years every day, you pick up and a lot of bars. You unrack a lot of bars for people on bench press.
Right, right.
You get really good at it.
Yeah, so. And then, you know, I don't know if you want to do the Fit Focus now, but one of the things I wanted to kind of talk about, I thought we could do this live, and that is, what do you think I should do going forward?
Well, you go ahead and jump into that.
Okay.
If your goal is, well, first of all, tell me your goal. Talk to me about what do you want to get out of future competitions?
My goal is I want to shoot for top 50 in the world.
And bench press.
And bench press.
Do you care about your squat and your deadlift in the meantime?
I assume that when you're exerting injury on the deadlift and the squat during a competition, it could affect your bench.
100%, yes.
So if my goal is to be in the top 50 in the world, which will probably take a 380 to be in the top in the world, if my goal is to be there, then probably I need to focus just on the bench.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a good point. Yeah.
Because I think it's important. You mentioned earlier about wanting to improve your squat and your deadlift as well. If you want to just focus on the bench, it's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Still similar.
Yeah.
The number one thing, the far and away thing, in my opinion, is that you weighed in at 209 for a 220 class.
Mm-hmm.
You have 11 pounds to gain. That's 11 pounds of muscle that you could have put on your frame and still make the weight class. How much more weight do you think you could lift with 11 pounds of muscle? Right? There are two ways to lift more weight. I've always told people this. There are two ways to lift more weight. Number one is to have more muscle. Number two is to have better form.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only two ways to lift more weight.
Right.
So if you have room to gain muscle. So even if you didn't improve your form at all, if you gained 11 pounds of muscle, you'd be able to lift more weight.
Right.
Now, once you got up to 220 and you're, you know, pretty lean like you are now and you weigh 220 and it's 11 pounds of muscle, then we have to focus on form because that's the only way to lift more weight because
right.
we can't gain any more muscle.
Right.
But in the meantime, we can put on muscle mass. So the main thing I would focus on then is probably just increasing your caloric intake, keeping your protein high, keeping the carbs up to put on the muscle mass.
Right.
Workouts, you know, you don't want to overwork your body because you are, if you were in your 20s, I would say we need
right.
to, you know, we need to be in the gym probably an hour and a half for 6 days a week just because your body can handle it. Your body can't recover from that much working out at this
right.
age. So I wouldn't have you, I'd maybe do, you know, hour long workouts 5 days a week, you know, something like that. But you're already up, what, about 3,000 calories a day?
I went back and looked at that. I think I was averaging more like 2,750.
2,750, and you weren't really changing. Your weight was staying pretty constant.
Yeah.
So I'd take you up 3,250, 3,500
yeah.
calories a day, you know, get you an extra 500 to 700 a day, and kind of see where that starts to take you. And I would focus a lot on back. You talked about doing two back days a week. I think mm-hmm. that's very important.
Yeah.
I would do a leg day, but if you're not going to be squat or deadlift focused, I wouldn't necessarily do a ton of squats or deadlifts. You do some, that's fine, but a lot of leg press, a lot of things that would add mass, especially to your quads. Your quads are very important for your leg drive.
Right.
So being able to push, you know, your feet are sitting on the floor while you're bench pressing, being able to push off of those, push yourself backwards, transfer that momentum to the bar to help the bar go up. So stronger quads. I would be hitting leg press weekly, you know, mm-hmm. some heavy leg press, which
oh, yeah.
you already kind of do.
Yeah.
But that's the main approach that I would take. And then, you know, slowly and controlled, put on that weight and try to put on as close to that 11 pounds of muscle as we can.
Right. Right. And I think one of the things that I'll have to go back to when we were getting up at, you know, having to be at the gym at 5 a.m. and I would be having to do that literally like four out of the 7 days a week. Cause I had had another gym that I was training in as well. When I was doing that, that's when I went easily from 195 to 213 because I was having a big fourth meal outside of my other meals during the day. And I think that's, now I have, one of the things is I've been able to do is I've been able to pack on 220 to 240 grams of protein in three meals now. So that's my, I've just suddenly in the last month or month and a half been able to do that. I haven't been able to do that for very long. So that's more of a recent thing. You just body slowly adapts when you're trying to put that much food down. And
yeah.
so now if I add in an additional meal early in the morning, that might be the difference to get me over the top.
Yeah, I think that's pretty necessary. If you're already at, you said 240 on protein, you know, you don't need a whole lot more protein. I would say if you went to 260, you'd be fine. So that, that meal you add on doesn't need to take your protein up that much.
Right. And I think, and I am probably a little light on carbs. I don't eat a lot of carbs because I just don't like carbs. So
for putting on weight though, there's just nothing better.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, I'm eating them. I've discovered I'm apprehensive about eating carbs because I don't enjoy them that much.
About rice? Do you like rice?
Yeah, I don't like rice that much, but I'll do. But I can eat it.
Do you like potatoes?
I do like potatoes.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, roast you some potatoes, and have them with your steak or your ground beef or your chicken or whatever.
Yeah.
That'll be a help.
Yeah, I like dipping my hamburger or my chicken. Like, I'll have protein. I'll put a big swipe of potatoes on it.
And, like mashed potatoes?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I like that. That's one of my favorites. But I do enjoy rice. I just don't like – I read something on rice in the last year that rice shouldn't sit in the fridge for more than 24 hours. It needs to be eaten literally within the 8 hours that you make it. Doesn't
really?
Yeah, that it actually starts to develop bacteria very quickly. And in Japan, a lot of people were getting very, very sick because they'd let their rice sit. And this was back in the 20s and 30s, and they came out with a law back then that you had to eat your rice within a certain amount of time because there was so much sickness because people allow the rice to sit. Now they didn't have great refrigeration back then, but the point is that there's been research that rice, even in the fridge, that rice will start to develop bacteria extremely quick. It doesn't have the shelf life like other foods. And it's not like your kidneys can't filter a lot of that out, but it's not supposed to sit that long. And that was research I did on it. And so that kind of freaked me out a little bit because I always like to cook up my rice and eat it the next day.
Yeah.
You know, and
meal prep it ahead of time. That,
right.
And it helps so much with rice because you can kind of meal prep it in bulk and then portion it out.
Yeah. So, but you know, I should trust my kidneys. It should be able to handle that. You know, I just have some kidneys that have had some damage.
That's interesting. So, I haven't seen that or looked into that. I need to do some research into that then, because I haven't necessarily experienced that. I've ate plenty of rice. That's,
I think, most
more
people
than 24
do.
Hours
yeah.
in the fridge, but I
think most people do. And I can't, I mean, that was probably maybe a year ago since I saw that. I kind of stopped eating rice when I saw that. But the point is that I understand that carbs are going to be the key. And I just, if I raise those, I'll be good.
It's probably the sacrifice that's necessary for you to make in order to get where you need to be. You know, if you told me that, you know, if you didn't say you wanted to go bench 385, the advice might be different. But I think, if that's what you're focused on, you know, this is kind of the temporary sacrifice that you're going to have to make. I mean, it's no different than somebody who walks in and they want to lose a certain amount of weight, you know, and we talk to them about the sacrifices that they're going to need to make in order to do that.
Yeah.
It's the opposite here, but it's still a sacrifice for you.
Well, and here's the funny thing is I'm figuring it'll probably take me the year and a half or two to do it, but I'll be crossing categories in a year and a half, break into the 60s. So maybe I can do it in both.
Ooh, yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Because I just with age, the numbers are going to drop. But here's the other thing that was nice about it. There was some older guys there.
100%. There was a guy that you were warming up with.
Mike.
Did you ask him how old he was?
Yeah, he was he was under the 55. He was 54 and under in that category, 51 to 50,
so
50, he's 54.
A couple years younger than you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a, I mean, that's the thing about powerlifting. That's the thing really cool about it. All ages, you know, both genders, all weights, all skill levels. I mean, there's a spot for everybody.
Yes.
You know, and I just think it was a good environment. right? Being at that meet, you know, it was at Strong Barbell Club in over in Kansas and like the Overland Park area. And I'd never been to that facility before. Very impressed with the facility, very impressed with how it was ran and the quality of people that were there.
Yeah.
Everybody's very nice, very welcoming, you know, very encouraging to one another. It is a competition, but it's not one of those that has like a dirty, you know, people are competing against each other and trying to make each other lose and stuff. Like right. Everyone wants everyone to be successful.
Yes.
And that's a positive environment.
Yeah, it was. I went up to the meet directors afterwards. And it was one of the owners. And I don't remember his name. It wasn't JP, but it was his business partner. And I said, I just want to tell you, I've never been to a powerlifting meet before, but it was, I felt like it was run very efficiently. And you guys seem like you really know what you're doing. And he just thanked me for that. And I was about my way, but very well done. You know, and so as I go forward, that will be, my goal. I guess you said two back days a week. What are your thoughts on two leg days a week?
No.
No? Okay.
You know, and this goes for more than just this specific situation. I do train females a little bit differently, mm-hmm. but males, I never do two leg days a week. I never did two leg days a week. Actually, I scratch it. There was a very short period of time where I attempted to do two leg days a week, and I just found that my legs couldn't recover.
Yeah.
Because you're having about 3 days, 3-4 days max rest between your leg days, and it just wasn't enough because I always saw the biggest benefit in my legs whenever I would just absolutely kill them, smash them, you know, an hour and a half workout. And then they may take 5-6 days to recover.
Mm-hmm.
But then by the next week, they're ready to go again. I would hit legs once a week, every seventh day. And I saw tremendous results. I actually saw my results go the wrong direction when I began to try to work them out twice a week. My leg days were a little shorter. My legs were still not quite feeling right by the time I did legs again. So I wouldn't push them as hard. And yeah, I actually went the wrong direction. I went back to one leg day a week. So because they're such a big muscle group, they take the longest to recover. And you want to make sure your legs are all the way recovered before you hit them again.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. I had a similar situation when I used to be in the gym 2.5 hours. It was for the whole body. I used to be in the gym 2.5 hours a day, and I plateaued. And when I started taking it down to an hour, that's when my strength started to come, you know. So
less is more.
Less is more, yeah.
It can be.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, all things said, you know, fantastic experience. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I won't have the nervousness going into the next one that I think I had in this one. And by that, I mean just kind of that, you know, this is new. I've never done this before. That's now gone.
Yeah, I mean, every single thing was new, from the rules meeting at the beginning to the, you know, award ceremony at the end and everything in between. I mean, it was brand new for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was an adjustment, and now you'll know what to do moving forward.
Yeah, yeah. No, it allowed me to put all that aside and just focus on why I'm there.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Absolutely.
Anyway, thank you very much for that, because I think having you there was a big difference.
Well, I was happy to do it. That was a little recap of the Matt's experience at the mm-hmm. 2024 Sunflower State Games powerlifting meet. And now we are going to move into our fit focus like we do every week. We have Matt sent me what I think is a very important fit focus.
Mm-hmm.
We have kind of an exciting revelation over the last couple weeks, and we got a little video clip that we're going to play to introduce it.
Yeah. All right. Let me grab this real quick here. Let's see here. I got to remember, figure out where the audio comes from on this thing.
The FDA finally did something right in banned vegetable oil. This is the worst thing you can possibly put in your body. Watch this next clip. Please don't ever use this stuff ever again. You won't be able to for much longer.
The FDA finally banned brominated vegetable oils known as BVOs. I'm telling you, for many, many years now, the pressure has been on because these things have been banned in Europe in most countries. But here in the United States, we're still enjoying the effects. Oh, yeah. Thyroid problems, liver, lungs, they get into fatty tissue. They accumulate in the body, cause major issues. Here's the problem. This goes into effect August 2nd. But the problem is companies still have 1 year to get it out of their products completely. You know what that means? Yes, we potentially can get affected by these things. Look, I've been telling people to get these out of their families' lives for many, many years, but now we're down to the clock. Okay, I'm going to read the list of the ones that we know still have this in it, but I'm going to tell you this right now. Google BVO products, and you can find a list because most of the products they're in are actually sodas, which our kids drink. But I'm going to tell you right now, Dr. Pepper still has it. 7-Up, their Sun Drop drink, still has it. Dollar Tree's Stars and Stripes Orange Soda still has it. Mountain Lightning Orangette from Walmart still has it. Clover Valley from Dollar General. Those are random ones. If you Google this, it will come up.
The FDA finally did something.
So there's a lot dropped in there.
Yeah.
So we're going to kind of break it down a little bit slower. But basically what has taken place is the FDA has revoked a regulation that allows for the use of brominated vegetable oil, or BVO, in food. They had previously, a long, long time ago, had allowed it to be used. They are revoking that regulation. In the video, the gentleman mentioned that it has significant harmful impacts on thyroid, on liver, lots of issues in the body, and most other countries outside of the United States had already banned this additive into food, this ingredient in food. The United States had not, and now they finally are. And this is really important because we talk on this podcast, we've talked many times about the dangers, vegetable oils, and what they can do. And this is only just a little step in the right direction, but it's really important that we're making a step in the right direction, because if what we know about the FDA is most of what they tell us and most of what the decisions they make are not good for our health, this is one little bright spot, one little glimpse, one little step in the right direction.
Yeah, and as you were I was thinking of that, Redden, you were talking, is like, what was it, what was the motivation that got them to do this? You know, it makes me, I mean, because, you know, it would be nice if they made a decision that was based on ethical, you know, decisions, but it makes me think that their hand was forced, or they got something out of it to ban it. But regardless, the result is still the same.
Well, it's interesting. I did have an article here where I pulled up, and the FDA said they did a study along with the NIH, and because of the results of this study, they are now removing it. This is what they're saying. And this has been a acceptable food additive since 1970.
Oh my gosh.
So there have been other countries all over the world banning this. People have been pointing out the negative health effects that we're suffering in this country because of it being in so prevalent in food. And just now, they're deciding to study it and come to the conclusion that, oh, we actually need to take
years.
It out.
Yeah.
And the fact they needed to do their own study, right? You have all these other countries already taking it out. I mean, it should be pretty obvious, but then they say, whoa, we found in a study all of a sudden that it's harmful. Well,
right.
Duh. You know, we all knew that. We all saw that the negative health effects. And
well, I mean, it's kind of like everything. A lot of things these days seem to be put up for show. We've done a study. Well, they already knew these things, but let's do the study to show it's official, because they probably knew what the results of the study would be. And so that's kind of the thing that, you know, it makes us so cynical. You know, it's like, even when it goes the direction it should, it's like, well, why? You know, because they've been basically poisoning us for, you know, decades. So I don't know.
Well, I think the study thing probably boils down to plausible deniability, kind of like, well, we didn't know, you know, now we have the study, now we know.
Right.
And so they kind of have an excuse for why they left it in for so long. But what What I'm not sure, I'd love your opinion on this, what I'm not sure they have an excuse for, and he talked about it in the video, the ruling goes into place on August 2nd, which is just here in a couple weeks. But it's not, the compliance date is not effective for 1 year from now.
Right.
So basically what they're saying is they did a study. They found out that this substance that's banned all over the world is terrible for you. They're going to ban it. They're going to put the ruling in place, but then it's not going to, you're not going to have to comply for a year.
Yeah.
So how does that make any sense? They know it's dangerous. They know it's terrible for you. And they're going to say, okay, you can keep selling it and putting it in your food for a year before you got to take it out.
Well, I know what they're doing. They're talking about, I'm not saying this is right, but I worked, I handled marketing for manufacturers for about 8 years. Anytime they're changing it, and it wasn't for oils, but it was for PEX pipe and for PVC pipe and for ABS plastic. And anytime you're in, you got those molds or those extruding machines set up to produce these things, they have particular products they put in there, and how they harden in the, through their processes, you know, changing chemicals in there changes everything, right? So it changes the process. And if you suddenly you're going to replace one of the components to make that plastic versus another, or I remember when they took lead out of brass, right? Because California came up with it first and they wanted to take the lead out of brass. And to make it almost 0% lead in the brass. Well, lead is a nice component to have in brass because it really firms up the metal. And when they did that, they did it for all the country. And I was working in the manufacturing sector at that time, and they gave them, I think they gave them 3 years. So, because it was going to take time to reset up their manufacturing processes. Now, with this, I'm guessing that's why the FDA did that, is that, oh, well, this stuff's dangerous, but it's going to be that they're going to have to spend time and money to adjust their the oils that they're making to accommodate that. That's my guess. But in light of how bad it is for everybody and how long they've been pushing it, I almost don't really care. I think it should be immediate.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a more important issue here, and that is the health of our population, the health of our country.
Yes.
Isn't that more important? I would argue that the, you know, it's going to take time and research and development in order for them to figure out how to create the product without this ingredient. But they probably should have done the research and development on the front end to make sure that what they're putting in their product wasn't poisonous.
Right. You're right. Why did the population have to continue to deal with this product at their, as a negative impact on the population? Why can't the companies experience a full negative effect, you know, almost as, I mean, they've been pushing it on us for, you know, 50 some years since it came out in 1970.
It's bad enough that so many people have been consuming these products, myself included, right? I've consumed Dr. Pepper before. You know, it's been many, many years, but I have. And so we've all consumed this, right?
Right.
But we consumed it kind of unknowingly. But now even the FDA is admitting that this stuff is poisonous for you and should be banned. But there are going to be people like me and you, we're not going to drink Dr. Pepper anyway.
Right.
But we have the education now because we've seen this, because we've read the articles, to know that that's what's taken place. That, oh, Dr. Pepper has banned substances that are now banned in it, and they don't have to comply for a year. So we know not to buy Dr. Pepper and drink Dr. Pepper because of that.
Right.
But how many people are not going to see this and are not going to know that there is officially FDA banned substances in what they're purchasing and drinking? And they don't even know. So they're not being kept safe by the Food and Drug Administration, whose job is to keep them safe.
Yes.
And they're deliberately being put in harm's way by this agency.
So my question is why didn't they just ban vegetable oil completely?
Well, you know, they made the specific argument that the bromination, the bromide added to it, is what causes a lot of the issues. And it does cause more issues, but I think a lot of the issues are also with vegetable oil as a whole. And this could be sort of the beginning of a trend, right?
I hope so.
It could be the first domino to fall, so to speak, and that moving forward, we see more seed oils and vegetable oils that are banned. I'm not that confident in it, given the history of the FDA, mm-hmm. but it's a possibility, and that would be a hope.
Yeah.
But like I said, I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah. That's that, you know, like I said, it's made us very cynical and that we don't even when they do seem to come out with the result that needs to be, you know, taken or the action that needs to be taken, we're still suspicious. And so, I'm not confident in the FDA. It's like anything. It's like me and you have talked about this in the past, is that if you want to know the nature of a company or the nature of a person, you watch the patterns, right? One time, it's not a big deal, right? All the time, like you see it consistently happening over and over. Now a character trait is showing itself. And so FDA has a long history of a pattern that's in the negative. So, you know, it comes out with this one positive thing. It makes me think we ain't going to see anything else for a while. But if they start banning a lot of these seed oils, and we've talked about them in nauseam, but the reason we covered it is that, you know, it's a win. You know, regardless how it came about, it's a win to get this thing off the grocery stores shelves. So that's why we're covering it, because, you know, we probably wouldn't be talking about seed oils again, except that the fact that this is a big win for us.
Well, the reason I think it's important is because our families that we talk to, our friends that we talk to, the people that listen to this podcast that we talk to, we have the access to the education and the resources of what we should and shouldn't put in our bodies, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't matter if the FDA bans this stuff or not, because I'm not eating it anyway.
Right.
But who this does serve to protect is the people who, you know, have not pursued their own education on this topic.
Right.
And that don't know. If you knowingly put this in your body and you're okay with it, even though it's banned, which plenty of people put things in their bodies all the time that they know are not good for them.
Right.
But it's the people who are not educated on the topic enough, and they don't know. They don't know what's healthy and not healthy for them. And that's the people that the FDA is here to protect, in my opinion. So you should always take your own health into your own hands. And to a certain point, I can argue, if you're not taking it into your own hands, then maybe you kind of deserve what you get. Right? So if you're not doing your own research to know that Dr. Pepper has this banned food substance in it, then it's your own fault, right?
Right.
But if we're going to have this agency that's supposed to police that for you, then they should at least do their job, or they should cease to exist, right? Because I'm more than confident to be able to manage my own nutrition, manage the things that I'm going to eat and what I put in my body without the FDA telling me anything. So I'm confident in that. If other people want that, then they should at least do their job. If not, then just might as well dissolve them.
Right. Yeah, no, that was a great clip right there. You know, I think the biggest thing is education. And that's why I like this podcast, is that we try to educate people. But not everyone listens to this podcast. So then, you know, me and you have the opportunity as trainers, to each person that we train, we talk to them individually about how to eat and what and how to approach it, and, you know, what's important as far as what we put in our body. And so we have that opportunity for each person that we meet. And but there was an app that came out recently. I don't know if I've mentioned this in the past. It's something that everyone can download on their phones. It's called Seed Oil Scout. And what it does is it tells you all the restaurants that use seed oil. Yeah, pretty cool. It's a little pricey. I think if I remember right, the price of it is, I'm looking down here. Let's see if I can find the price of this thing. Yeah, so the price of this thing is $35 a year. So, or is that right? There's a lot of different prices on here. I guess it's $100 a year. Anyway, I guess the level of service or something. So it's something you pay for. You can pay for monthly. You can pay for the year. And if you go out to eat a lot, and I don't eat out a lot, so it's not really beneficial to me. But it'll tell you where all the seed oils are, and you know, one of them being Chipotle uses lots of seed oil.
Well, Matt, let me give you a tip to save you $100.
What's that?
Ask them.
That's right.
They won't lie to you.
Yeah,
they can't lie to you, right? Yeah. They have to be very open and honest about what they're using.
Yeah.
And there's a guy who does that. He makes videos, videos himself going in and asking how they cook their different food ingredients and ask him if they use seed oils. And they're always very honest with them about it. So, I mean, just ask them how they cook it. And that, if you're going to eat there anyway, you can ask. And so then save you $100.
Yeah. Well, and it's, I don't eat out that much. So, about the only time I get out to eat food is that I'll get a pizza, you know, because it's got a lot of carbs.
Yeah.
So,
pizza, I like pizza a lot.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. So, yeah. So, but you know, this is such an important, you know, it's a kind of a milestone moment. And that, because, you know, every once in a while we get a little victory, you know, in this sea of, you know, negative things for the health. And so I'm glad that this is happening. And I hope everyone hears this, that, hey, in 1 year, this particular product is going to be off the shelf.
One down, only like 1,000 to go.
Remove the red dyes all the dyes. Yeah.
You brought up Chipotle a minute ago. That kind of brought something to my mind I want to talk about with Chipotle too.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is what I'm going to say. Okay. So everyone knows when you go out to like a pizza place, for example, like you're eating junk food.
Yeah.
Like that food is not good for you. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are these restaurants out there like the Subways, the Chipotles, these restaurants that are branding themselves as, oh, we're like healthy eating. Guys, they're not.
No.
No restaurants are.
Right.
That doesn't really exist. And if it does exist, it's probably super expensive and you'll be able to realize it. But somebody did a study one time on Chipotle and how much meat you get when you go in there, you know, because I don't know what they advertise, but they took they ordered like 10 Chipotle bowls. I think it was steak bowls. And they took the meat, they pulled all the meat out of each bowl and put it in its own little separate bowl, and then they weighed it. Do you want to guess what the average amount of meat they got in their bowls was?
2.5 ounces.
It was like 3 ounces, right around there.
Yeah.
That's tiny.
Yeah.
That's like nothing. That's 18, 20 grams of protein.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you need to be getting way more than that in your food. And then everything else besides that steak is the rice and the beans and all the carb-filled stuff. So you're sitting there mostly eating carbs, very little healthy proteins, and it's cooked in seed oils.
Right.
You know, I just...
Well, here's the thing is, like, we went to a place called, my wife wanted to go out, so we went out a couple of weeks ago. What was that place called? Something Ranch, Tortilla Ranch, okay? And it's basically it's Chipotle, but different company. And I was looking at their meat scoop, right, how much meat they're going to put on this thing, and I was like, I said, well, give me the chicken because that's the highest concentration of protein you have there. So he does the meat scoop, and I looked at it thinking, well, that's only 3 ounces right there. I said, double that, please, you know, because I need at least 6 ounces on there. And so they doubled it. But that scoop, I mean, it's like about that big, and it's about that tall. And that's about a 3 ounce, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's nice because if I ask them, they'll just hold the scoop up, give you that much. They have to go look it up to know how much they're actually giving you sometimes. Because a lot of times I've asked restaurants, how big is that patty? This big. You know, I'm like, okay, fine. You know, I was like, I mean, I have to, I mean, a lot of times I'm pretty dead on when I look at meat, how much it is, but I always kind of ask.
Yeah. So be careful out there anytime you're going to restaurants.
Yes. Yeah.
Because a lot of times you're not necessarily getting what you pay for. So think about that. If you did go get double meat, then you got 6 ounces, which then you had to pay an extra like $5 or something to get that. And then you still only got 6 ounces. You need to double that again. And yeah. Then next thing you know, you'd have like a $30 Chipotle bowl just to get the protein.
That's right. Need. Yeah, no, it's, you're right. You're right. The only time I've seen an absolute crap ton of meat is that it was at your, bachelor party when we went out and had all that meat and that big platter came out. Meat
platter.
And it's like, man, this is a lot of meat. And yeah. It fed everybody.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But now it was expensive.
Yeah.
But that was fantastic. And that's when you had pounds of meat, not ounces of meat.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I would say for the most part, right? Barring some really unique scenarios. If you want to get the right nutritional content when you eat, you need to eat at home, cook at home.
Yeah.
Eating out's fine every now and again, right? I still eat out every now and again, a couple times a month, because it's okay every now and again.
Yeah.
But if
yeah.
you make it a habit, if you make it a consistent thing, just know you're not getting the nutrition that you need. You don't come in and tell me that you're eating Chipotle every day for lunch, or you're going out to here or there for dinner, or even the healthy places, or you're getting a Subway sandwich or something, and oh, I'm doing good on my nutrition. No, you're not. And even if you plug in the, another thing that like I am not really anymore anyway, I'm not a calorie counter. I am kind of a protein counter, but it's just a ballpark because people hold so hard and fast to the numbers, right? They'll get the MyFitnessPal, and I think MyFitnessPal is great. I think tracking your calories and tracking your macros is very helpful because it teaches you a habit, but they get too caught up in the numbers. So I have 162 grams of protein for the day. It's like, you have somewhere around there. It may be 140, it may be 180. Not every food is created equal, right?
Right.
An egg, for example, an egg has 7 grams of protein. Well, as well as I do, some eggs are bigger than others.
Yeah.
Right? I've had eggs before where you get double yolks.
Yeah.
Well, how much does that have in it then? How do I know? Is this egg only a 6 gram or is it bigger? It's an 8 gram,
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible to get right. You go to these restaurants and they have the nutritional value and it gives you an exact calories, an exact protein, exact fat, exact carb. But they can legally be off by 20% on that and still be okay. And then not only can they be off by 20%, but who's testing that? Right. Who's holding them accountable to? You go into Chipotle and they give you a scoop, right? Well, the different amounts of meat are coming out on each scoop.
Yeah.
From person to person.
Right.
It's like they scoop it up and then one of the pieces falls off and then, there went three, four grams of protein.
Yeah, just
fell off the spoon before they dump it in your bowl.
Right.
It's not an exact science. It's more about knowing generally where you're at, knowing that you're eating healthy whole foods, eating the amounts that you need to eat, and that you're in the ballpark.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not about hitting a very specific
number. A lot of people that I train, counting macros is stressful to them. And I tell them, I just had a consultation the other day and, counting macros was like overwhelming. And so I said, all I want you to do is I want you to focus on your protein for right now. Don't worry, and just keep your carbs low for right now. And I don't want you to measure your carbs out. Just, try to stick with fruit, but keep your protein high and don't worry about the other two right now. I want to see where your protein is for the last week. And then when you come in, we'll talk again. But because sometimes it's just like, when people are trying to eat healthy, when you're talking about a lifestyle change, it's all overwhelming, right? Because you're talking about maybe adding a meal or adding a protein shake during the day. And as you know, protein doesn't, outside of a shake, doesn't travel very well. You have to have refrigeration. And so if you're out and about like a nurse or something, or you're not around a fridge, you know, then that makes it difficult, right? Or you don't, it's hard to bring all your food around with you all the time if you're at a position for a long time. So we understand the challenges that it, that take for, to be healthy. And unfortunately you can't really go down to the Quick Trip or run to the Price Chopper and confidently get, you know, healthy food. It's like a chess game, as I've talked in the past, like, is that really health food that it says on there? I mean, so you have to go through this process of eliminating what's good for you, what's bad for you. Not everyone just has all that kind of time. So we understand that challenge. And so, you know, that's why I say, tell people, you know, start with your protein. Let's get that locked in first.
You got to get creative, though. Be willing to be creative. A lot of people will be very self-limiting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't do it. They make excuses. I have this going on, or I have that going on. A story I always come back to is a story my brother-in-law would tell me. He used to travel for work a lot. Like he'd fly out on a Monday morning and he'd come fly back on a Friday evening. You know, he'd be gone all week.
Right.
And so he's out of town. Well, you know, you can't cook at home. You can't really take your meal prep with you, right? What do you do? And he told a story about, like, a lot of times they would travel in pairs. So like two people go to the same job, and they would go buy like a disposable, you know, little like charcoal grill or something that's for like $20. And they would like grill out steaks outside the back patio of the hotel.
Oh, wow.
In the evenings for dinner, you know, go buy steaks at the local at the grocery store and like grill them out. And that's like what they did for dinner.
Yeah.
Instead of having to go to restaurants and stuff, like it can be done. You have to you have to kind of be creative, but there are ways to do it. I was thinking about that. What would be really cool here? I don't really know. I need to like look out back at the setup, but throwing like a barbecue grill out there or something, and you get hungry, you're like, yeah, I got some thawed meat in the fridge, let me go throw it on the grill, and
that would be awesome. Up.
And like it's already here,
you know. I bet Jeff probably would let you do that.
I mean, that would be awesome.
You know, you just go out and put a $150 Weber out there, and if someone steals it, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, you know, I've got an old, almost worn out Charbroil brand grill that you go out there, if someone walks off with it, who cares?
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, I love that idea. You know, probably the only thing is you'd have to keep it away. There's a lot of trees back there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but you they're a good, you know, 40 feet from the back of that building, so you'd be fine.
Yeah, it'd be nothing better than like getting done with the training session, like, oh, I got a 30-minute break, let me go.
I love that idea.
Grill up a steak and down it real quick, a freshly grilled, pull it right off, no longer having to microwave
it. It's happening. It's happening.
I just planted a seed.
You did. I'm getting excited just thinking about it. I was like, man, Parker is too creative.
Or
like
even
this.
Better would be like a Blackstone. You could just like cook breakfast, and you like get it for your 5 a.m. training session, and you do like 5, 6 a.m., whatever.
So
you have
Blackstone
a break.
Being?
The flat top grills?
I haven't seen them. Or I don't know much about them.
You've never seen a Blackstone?
I probably have, but I never used one.
You ever been to like a hibachi grill?
Yeah.
It's like the same concept, like one of those grills where it's just the flat. And, you know, you can cook like eggs on it. You cook bacon, you cook vegetables, you know, you
can
cook your meat too.
You can cook that on a grill.
You could cook it on a grill with grates, but this is just like a flat top grill like they might have at a restaurant or something.
Okay, but you can put it in the back though.
Well, they have portable ones now that are a little small. They're kind of like the size of a barbecue grill, but they're portable like on wheels the same way a barbecue grill is, and you can move them around whatever.
All right.
You know, they're competitively priced to like barbecue grills, I don't know, $300 or $400 new,
right?
Something like that,
right?
But
very nice. I'll have to shoot that across Jeff's table and see what we'll ask him that on the next podcast.
drop it on him when we have him on.
Yeah,
that would be hilarious.
Yeah.
But I mean, just thinking outside the box, I guess, is my point. Not that everybody has the ability to do that, but find a way to get it done.
Yeah,
because to me, food tastes so much better when it's cooked the right way, you know, if you can cook it fresh, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
No, I mean, everything tastes better when it's right off the grill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't prefer to do that. If I have to, absolutely, because that's better than the alternative.
Absolutely.
You know, or, I mean, I used to, there is food you can eat cold, protein that you can eat cold. Now, a lot of people probably not going to be with me on this, right? I haven't got any of my family on this. But what I like to do, if I know I'm going to be out somewhere and I need a protein and I can't warm it up, I take cans of sardines.
Oh yeah.
And you can buy sardines at Costco. Yeah. They're already like,
they're
boned.
Good.
They're already boned and skinned. They're not like the whole fish thing, but they're very, very high in protein. And it's literally just like a can, kind of like a can of tuna almost, but like you just take it with you, pull the top off, you know, as long as you have a plastic fork or something, like you just eat them right out of there. And it basically tastes like tuna. And, you know, I'll take like three cans with me. They're like 22 grams per can. That's like 66 grams of protein right there. And so I can have a 66 gram protein lunch with me anywhere, wherever I go.
Yeah.
You know,
I will say this is that they taste great. My only caveat to that is you gotta be real careful with them because the olive oil gets everywhere.
It does. Yeah. Yeah, so, you gotta have a place to drain.
Yeah. That out. You have to have a place to drain that out. Cause if you just take the top off right at a table and you think that olive oil is not going to get everywhere because it's all the way to the top, you know? So you gotta siphon some of that out of there.
Yeah. But that's another good option. I don't know if you have any other ideas for being able to get meals in on the go protein.
I mean,
that's not protein powder or protein bars, right? Cause everybody knows you can take protein powder with you, and you can take protein bars, and that'll do in a pinch. I do that sometimes, but
yeah, I mean, it's as far as in, outside of meal prepping and stuff like that, and you know, bringing coolers and stuff. We've covered so much of that, and I think for the most part, it's about, you know, making sure that you're actually planning ahead. You know, in finding, being creative about your situation, right? You know, and it's kind of like with me, what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to get up early, not so much to go to work, but to eat for me to reach my goals, because I need time for my stomach to digest four big meals versus, you know, three big meals. And so that's just what I'm going to have to do to reach the weight I want to reach, because I can't put enough food down at three meals plus some snacking to get past 210.
Doesn't seem like it.
Yeah. I've been trying to do it for over 6 months. So
yeah,
it's just not happening.
And I will say this too, you know, you're in a unique situation because you are trying to put on weight, but for somebody who's in a situation where they're maybe trying to lose weight, it's never a bad option. Going back to our podcast from a couple weeks ago, it's never a bad option to skip a meal.
Right.
Do a little intermittent fast. That's never a bad option. You don't want to consistently be like skipping out on a bunch of meals days at a time all the time, right? Because you still need fuel, keep your metabolism up.
Yeah, I want to address that with you. So I just recently had a client, and she was intermittent fasting all the time. You know, stopped eating at 8, didn't eat till noon every single day. She's only getting 60 grams of protein in. Mm. Yeah. So, and she's not at the weight she wants to be, and she can't lose any weight. So I said, I love intermittent fasting, but I want you to take a step away from that and add a meal in the morning to see if you can get your protein in, because there was no way she's full on those two meals that she's eating in a day. And she's stuck at, and she's eating clean, and she eats salmon all the time. But I said, let's go ahead and include that first meal of the day, see if we can get more protein in during the day, because I want to try to get 40-40 and then, because at the evenings, sometimes she'll eat up to 60 grams of protein. She told me what she's eating, because she eats like two patties of 6 ounces each of salmon. And then she puts about another 3 or 4 ounces in her salad. I mean, she's a salmon, loves salmon.
Two patties of 6 ounces plus 3 or 4 ounces?
Yeah.
Like a pound of salmon?
That would be probably
a pound.
That'd be about 12. Nine to 10, right?
Six and six and then four. 12.
Oh, that's right. It is a pound. That is a pound.
I think she's getting more than 60 grams of protein then.
Well, isn't that like 5.5 an ounce for that?
Yeah, somewhere around there. But even at 5, that's 80, even if it's 5 grams per ounce.
Yeah, that would be right. So,
even if it gets up more like 5.5, and it's almost 100. That's almost 100 grams protein.
Yeah, so I think I figured 60 because I'm not sure she knows what ounces are. But
that's true, and she may not be actually. Right. That's another thing, right? Sometimes actually weigh your food, people, because sometimes you eyeball it and you guess, and it's different than what you thought it was.
Yeah, so I think I remember I retracted off of that. It's like, there's no way she's putting that much down, so yeah. I'm going to say 60.
That's a lot to eat in a meal.
Yeah, and so, but I just told her, you know, if you can do 3 meals a day and try to do a 40-40, you know, you're actually, and eat the same thing you're eating, you're now going to be well over 100.
Yeah.
And I talked about the things she enjoys eating, and we kind of talked about some foods for those 3 meals, and then throw in a protein shake in between lunch and dinner, and see if we can not snack and cut the carbs out. She's eating lots of carbs.
That's her problem,
yeah,
really.
So
I would say the main things I would take from that is not enough protein. If she's really only eating the 60 grams, like you said, that's not enough protein, and probably too much carbs, right? Yeah. Because if she's not losing weight, but she's only eating 6 grams of protein, she's getting other stuff in there.
That's right.
I would be eating more protein, less carbs. The salmon's good because it's high in fat. So she's getting her fat, she's getting her protein. Keep those high. Take the carbs down. I'd love to see what her results are then. How long did she say she'd been intermittent fasting?
I think for my take from it, it's been probably around 6 months.
Then that's about the right time to maybe get off of it for a while. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I have found intermittent fasting for a prolonged period of time, while it's not, it doesn't become detrimental to the health at all. It's still very healthy for you,
no.
But it can cause plateaus because your metabolism adjusts and it right. kind of slows down to adjust to that. And a lot of times, yeah, adding in a third meal, a breakfast meal, especially if it's high in protein, can kind of, over the course of a couple months, can jump your metabolism back up. You may not make any progress downward by doing that, but then when you go back to intermittent fasting, your body has some ammunition to make progress again.
Right. And her lunch had zero protein in it. None at all.
That's another problem, too. You should never be eating a meal with no protein.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, so those are the slight adjustments.
So she ate protein at dinner only.
Exactly.
And she was claiming to eat a pound of salmon. There's no way she was eating a pound of salmon at dinner.
Yeah, that's what she told me.
How big of a person was this? How big of a woman?
She was probably, I would say she was about 5'2", 5'3", 195.
Very unlikely she was eating that much salmon.
Yeah.
Another thing that is common, and I don't think people necessarily do it intentionally. They sometimes do it either unknowingly or even sometimes defensively, mm-hmm. is when you're talking to them, they will stretch the truth a little bit about what they're doing, what their right. eating habits are. There are certain people that I've talked to where you just know it doesn't make sense, right? Like, oh, what are you eating every day? Well, I'm eating this. It's like, that's not possible.
Well, right? And that's why I came out of it with 60 grams, because I said if she's actually eating, because that was the thing. She said, I'm having 2 salmon patties. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, well, how big are these salmon patties? Because I think they're 6 ounces. And I'm like, usually the salmon patties I've seen are 3 to 4, but yeah. I'll go with that. And then she goes, well, and then I also like having a salad with salmon chunks in it. And I go, when do you eat that? And well, she go. I said, "Are you eating that at dinner as well?" Because yeah, I really like salmon. I'm like, "Well, how much you put in there?" She probably, you know, 3 to 4 ounces. And I'm like, "Okay, well, I'm just gonna say 60."
Yeah.
You know. So, but she's getting very little protein, you know, and she needs to more than double that. So
yeah.
You know. So I just told. I mean, and I know how long it takes to get the protein up there. So I told her, you know, it's gonna take you a few months to learn how to eat like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree.
Yeah.
Interesting case study though. I like when we have that, you know, we'll never mention any names
of course
to out people, but it is really interesting to talk about specific situations because every situation's different. I have myself and I know myself really well. You know yourself really well. We have each have clients that we've come to know really well and understand their situation, but never is a shortage of new and different situations for us to tackle and new challenges. And I love when new people walk in the door and they're like a whole new blank slate that and a whole new, not that they're a problem to solve, but their nutrition and their fitness is a problem that we're trying to solve.
Yeah.
And it's exciting.
Yeah. And that's, you kind of get that when you get new consultations. Mm-hmm. So very good. Very good.
Loving it. Well, we're having a great time doing this podcast. Happy to continue to bring this to you guys. It was fun talking a little bit about Matt's meat. Matt, I just want to say, I thought you did a tremendous job.
Thank you. I'm really proud
of how you performed and setting the record. And I know you've got a lot of room to improve and you're going to, sky's the limit from here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and just, we'll take one day at a time and we'll let you know when the next tourney is and our meet is. And, that's something we're discussing now.
Yep, absolutely. So moving forward, I know we were talking before this podcast, have some plans, have some different guests on. There are some new faces around now that we're over here at the Anytime Fitness and Lee Summit and made some new friends and got some new people we want to introduce to you guys. So thank you all for listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode.
Yeah, well, next week will be episode 29, as this one's episode 28. Take care, guys.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted for Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.